Anyway, I'm going to start in Genesis chapter 3. Very obvious, maybe, place to start for this kind of study. But Genesis chapter 3. But it's amazing that this would even be a controversial point in theology. But you see in Genesis chapter 3, probably the most familiar, or one of the more familiar things in Genesis chapter 3, what will we call this? How would we refer to this passage? If you had to say, all right, if I said, what's in Genesis chapter 3? The fall of man, right? When Satan tempted Adam and Eve and sin entered into the world at that point. But if you drop down, you know, then in verse number 15, you get the verse, I will put enmity between thee and the woman, between thy seed and her seed, it shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. That, of course, in a very disguised seed form, is a prophecy of the Messiah that would be the seed of the woman one day. And so you have that. Those are familiar, maybe not as familiar, but drop down a little bit further. You have in verse 16, he gives Eve her punishment. Verse 17 and through 19, he gives Adam his punishment. Then look at verse 20. And Adam called his wife's name Eve because she was the mother of all living. So obviously the first mother in the Bible was Eve. Now, the name Eve, it comes from the Hebrew word that means to live, or it's the word for life or to live. So, in essence, he named her life because she was the mother of all living. Now, you know, you want an interesting Bible trivia question. We say, who are the only people in the Bible without a human father? You know that one, don't you? One would be Jesus. That'd be obvious. Who's the other one? Adam, right? But who's the only person in the Bible without a human mother? Well, that would be Adam and Eve, right? Oh, he's saying Joshua because he was the son of Nun. Yeah, there you go. Get your dad joke in there. Yeah, Joshua was the son of Nun. And it's spelled N-U-N in English, which makes it even better. but, you know, Jesus had a mother. I mean, we go through all of that when we talk about the fact that he was God and man, right? He had a mother, but he didn't have a human father. But who are the only people in the Bible with no human mother? Well, that'll be Adam and Eve. And so Eve was called the mother of all living. If we had accurate records, we could trace the genealogies all the way back to Adam and Eve. But you see there, probably the one of the more familiar stories there with Adam and Eve. You know, that was the first two. We say, well, why would that be controversial? I mean, it's amazing that that could even be theologically controversial, that we would have to say, no, God created man, and Adam and Eve were the, you know, the first two, and that was the original parents. That's where the human race started. But, you know, in our day, science, so-called, the follow the science that gave us social distancing and masks and all of that mess. Science says, you know, we evolved from a blob of something we're not sure what, you know, and it started out as something in the water and then eventually came on land and all of that kind of stuff, you know. I saw something really interesting this week. I believe it was on FoxNews.com, but I read the article, but they said that there was a discovery with a dinosaur fossil, and basically based on the development of that and how gave however they reproduce and all of that, they said, wow, dinosaurs are older than we thought, so that blows up our chain, you know, our, we all know it's an imaginary chart on the evolutionary scale, right? You know, you got, it starts with this and it works its way up till, you know, an ape that turns into a man and that kind of thing. But it's like, well, this you know, redoes all the calculations. And I'm like, I can save you some time. In the beginning, God created, right? I mean, but why do we have all of that, these other theories? You know, because according to Romans chapter 1, because they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. Okay, man is always looking for some other explanation. So like something as simple as Eve was the mother of all living becomes a scientific or theological point in our day. Like, no, God created. And not only that, in Genesis 2 and Genesis 3, it says God created them male and female. In the male and female created he them. It's stated two or three different ways. But, you know, why is that significant? Because God created us in a specific pattern and with, you know, functions and roles that he designed. The whole, you know, gender is whatever you feel like. You know, however you identify. I was messing with one of the chapel speakers a few weeks ago. He's a graduate, you know, so he asked me, "Are you Dr. Hankey?" I said, "No, I'm not even a nurse." And that threw him for a loop. He said, "Well, are you a mister?" And I said, "Yeah, that's how I identify." Well, then it really threw him for a loop, you know. But, you know, the fact that that would even be a point of discussion is really a matter of absurdity, is it not? I mean, God created male and female. You have Adam and Eve, and from them descended all of the human race. But see, this, the whole, you know, are you a man, are you a woman, are you not sure, or which one are you this week? All of that is a rejection of God's design and God's creation, right? Okay, God made us this way. We don't like to acknowledge that. We want to say we're the masters of our domain and we can do whatever we want and be whatever we want and all of that. It's crazy. But, I mean, there's a reason. You know, Adam is the father of all living. Eve is the mother of all living. But there's a reason in Romans chapter 5, it talks about the first Adam and the second Adam. Okay, they were the origin point for the human race. But you have Eve here named. You know, a lot of the names in the Old Testament are transliterated, you know, kind of taking the Hebrew pronunciation and putting it in English letters, but this one isn't. Eve is more of a translation than a straight transliteration, but Eve, her name means life or living one, and it's related to the explanation that he gave. I named you life or living one because you are the mother of all living. And then if we go a little bit further, obviously there are other ladies in Genesis, but they're not all given to us by name. But one of the more familiar names in Genesis would be let's go to Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11. All right, now, Genesis chapter 11, you have a famous story, which is what we call the Tower of Babel. And then starting in verse 10, we get begat, the son of the son of the son of. You know, that's the kind of sections that you have to like really make yourself focus and read if that's in your Bible reading, right? But there's some really interesting things in here. But drop down to verse number 27, Genesis 11, verse 27. These are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Haran begat Lot. And Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. And Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarah, Sarai. And the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, father of Milcah, father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren, and she had no child. So we meet her here. And then later on, we find out that God did, in fact, bless her. You know what's? It was interesting to me in just kind of working through these studies. Sarah had no child. And so they decided, well, God had told Abraham, I'm going to make your seed as the sand on the seashore for multitude, right? Sarah had no child, so they decided, well, maybe we misunderstood God's instructions. So they decided to help God out a little bit. All right, and then who came into the picture? It's Sunday school. It's all right. You can give some feedback. Who came into the, say it louder, Miss Stone. I see you mouthing it. Hagar. Yeah. You know whose idea that was? It was Sarah's idea. Sarah went to Abraham and said, well, I'm obviously having no children. It's been a long time. It doesn't look like it's happening for me. why don't you take my wife, my servant, and I'll adopt that child. That was the custom in that part of the world, that they would, you know, have a child by the wife's servant, and then that would be adopted as the heir of the family. And that was actually Sarah's idea. We see that in chapter number 16, verse 1, Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children. She had a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. And Sarah said to Abraham, behold, the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee go into my maid, that I may obtain children by her. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarah. Now, I always, you know, for a long time I wondered why there was no questioning or pushback. And then I learned, you know, that was the custom of the day. It was pretty common in their culture. They had seen it before. That was kind of a known practice. But that instance right there was a lack of faith on their part, right? You know, then in the following chapter, God comes to them and says, that wasn't my plan. Sarah, your wife's going to have a child. But it was interesting. You had Sarah, and then later on, you have Isaac and Rebekah, and you have Hannah, the mother of Samuel. But it's interesting to notice how many names that we know from the Bible, much less unnamed families, but how many we know that, you know, desperately wanted to have children, and it didn't happen, or it didn't happen on the schedule they expected, right? Something I just never really paid attention to as a younger man. You know, it's maybe something you'd think, well, it always goes this way. That's the way life happens. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. We have friends on the mission fields, not a family that our church supports, but somebody I went to school with, and they've been married probably close to 20 years now. And, you know, would love to have children. And so far, the Lord hasn't given them to them. You know, and it's just kind of interesting to see how that's not unusual. It's not unusual in our day. You know, it was very common all the way through history. But you have here Sarah with no child. And then in chapter 17, the Lord appears to him. Well, excuse me, it's not chapter 17. It's chapter 18. It's chapter 18 where the visitors show up to Abraham and he, you know, begged him to stay and all of that. And then God says, am I going to hide what I'm going to do? Verse 10, he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life. And lo, Sarah, thy wife, shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent door which was behind him. Now Abram and Sarah were old and well stricken in years, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure? My Lord, being old also. Now, we sometimes focus on that part, but did you catch the part where Sarah was right behind the door listening to the conversation? What are they talking about? We don't get many visitors out here. I wonder what's going on. But, you know, she laughed. Why did she laugh? Because, humanly speaking, her time was past. That was not going to happen for them. But God wanted it to be such a circumstance that the only explanation here for Sarah was that this was a miracle of God. It was, you know, God fulfilling his promise, and only God can get the glory for that. But so you have Sarah, chapter 17, verse 16, we read this, I will bless her and give thee a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be of her. That was after, in chapter 16, he had a son named him Ishmael. And then in chapter 17, God reappeared to Abraham and said, I'm going to give you a son. He's like, well, just, I have one. Bless Ishmael. And then God says, no, I'm going to give you a child with Sarah. And she would be a mother of nations. But, you know, we know the story. We look back at it. You even see it mentioned again in Hebrews chapter 11, right? In the Faith Hall of Fame. By faith, Sarah received strength to conceive seed, right? Her initial response was, that's crazy, that's nuts, that's never going to happen. But then, eventually, she came to a point of persuasion. No, that was God speaking to us, and my husband believes it, and that was God speaking to us, and no, maybe God really is going to do this. But you see that Sarah came to a point of belief as well. Right? she came to that same understanding, but you know, and that was mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11. But you have Sarah and Hagar. And then you would drop down to Genesis chapter 24. I thought this was interesting. Turn over with me to Genesis chapter 24. If you have a study Bible, what's the heading for Genesis chapter 24? Does it say something like a bride and Isaac, a bride for Isaac, something like that? Yeah. So this is the story where Abraham says, don't take a Canaanite wife for my son. But if you do the math, we're told at the end of this chapter when Rebekah finally came back with the servant, we're told how old Isaac was. Anybody remember how old Isaac was when he finally got married? You got it, Brother Mark, 40 years old. Okay, so how old would Abraham be at that point? 140. Okay, so Brother Larry wrestles around equipment and stuff at work and that kind of thing. He'll come in sometimes on Wednesday night and talk about feeling old because he's sore from doing that. Well, just take your age and double or triple it. You know, that's where Abraham was, 140 years old. Okay, it's no wonder he's like, I'm not up to making this trip. Yeah, okay, I see that. That's why he sent his servant. Now, total side note, but I still think it's fun. If Brother Jeremy Lockhart were in here, I would have him.